Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
He was about, I don't know, 9, my oldest lad, never been to, 7, I think, he'd never been to a football match. So I said, it's great to be practiced all the way down, it's Manchester United sport. I'd never been to a football match either, which is terrible, really.
What?
Yeah, I'd only been to one, and I wasn't really
some
paying attention.
Some people don't.
Just never been. And so we practiced all the way down, you know, he was 7, and we practiced, we knew that the guy with the number 7 shirt, when he got the ball, we had to go, ooh, ah, Cantona, ooh, ah, Cantona. We were really good at it by the time we got there. The game just about started, we went in, he was absolutely amazing. 56,000 people, Sellers Park, he just absolutely overpowered. And the number 7 got the ball. And so we leapt to our feet and were drowned out by 56,000 people shouting out, he's French, he's Flash, he's shagging Leslie Ash, Cantona, Cantona. You know that old cliche, you know, he went in a boy, he came out a man. I think he was changed completely by that.
So you were teaching your son.
I was indeed. I clapped my hands over his ears.
I like the idea that you were on the public transport on the way to Sellhurst Park teaching your son how to chant.
Yeah, ooh,
they must have thought, what a middle
class. No, we were in a car, actually. Don't worry. I tell you the other bit, we were in a car. But the other thing I remember so vividly is we got the South Circular and we're approaching Sellhurst Park, the Crystal Palace ground. And coaches began to join the South Circular at this point that had clearly come from Manchester with Manchester supporters. And on
not
the
many, though.
It all come from Brighton. Chelsea, actually. And on the roof of one of these coaches, I will never forget, and we both sat and looked at it in absolute horror and silence and awe, was a guy standing. He climbed out of the, you know, this coach had a little skylight on the top. He climbed out the skylight, right? He was wearing a red plastic cape and he was holding a red plastic trident and a completely full, I had spilled a drop, pint, probably of Thatcher's old rascal, right? And he was there on the top of a moving coach. And I thought, these guys are going to be hardcore.
That's right. Yeah.
This is my little lad who had never been to a football match. We literally thought, oh my God.
Yeah. You didn't start him off on the nursery slopes of going to Brentford or anything like that. Man United Palace. Man United players regularly launch themselves out off the pitch to attack supporters. You know, that's the safest place to take your child for his first match. Anyway, Word Podcast, here we are. Joined by Nigel Tassel.
Who's bought several chinking bottles of Thatcher's old rascal cider.
Yeah, chink, chink, chink.
Thereby hangs a tale, because Nigel comes from... Where have you come from?
I live in the Mendip Hills, which are the Ranger Hills, Somerset.
So as the old advert used to have, which you're not old enough to remember, oh, he comes up from Somerset, where there's only apples grow.
You sound like you're from my village.
Yeah, indeed.
That could have been me talking. Nigel's brought some... I felt I ought to point out that Nigel lives in a stately home, don't you?
I don't live in a stately home. I have an office.
But okay.
He writes in a stately home.
So anybody
which
who reads
I find
word
fascinating and reads articles by Nigel can think of him there dipping his goose quill.
He's looking out on the, you know, the kind of... you know, the scrotum, the wrinkled retainer is mowing the lawn down to the lake, And when he needs a bit of inspiration, he goes out and swings on a 5-bar goat overlooking a pig. Contemplates a pig.
This is very, very, very true. It really is.
Rosy cheeks.
It genuinely is.
So how come you work in a stately home? How does that work?
I rent an attic room there. So I've got a writer's garret, and it is fantastic. And I look out, my view is undisturbed by any sign of man at all whatsoever.
Wow.
It's just open fields.
There
is a huge lake. There's a big lake called Blagdon Lake there, which is a big fishing lake. And my view is of pheasants, cattle. I saw a fox yesterday, deer, squirrels.
Is it Eric Clapton or something?
No. It's kind of used as a conference centre. It used to be an educational facility.
So, leave a normal family house in the morning.
I do.
And say, that's enough of this. I'm going out to live my... Blanding's Castle fantasy all day long.
It is like that.
How does your other half look upon this?
She loves it. She loves it. She's used it before on days when I've been working somewhere else.
Really?
She goes and gets a bit of peace and quiet from the kids.
Oh, God.
And you do. I do watch the gardener. I watch him going up and down the lawn, and very jealous of him on sunny afternoons.
Makes you want to take up pipe smoking, doesn't it? I wouldn't get any work done. I'm out of window.
It's the one thing I most want in a working space is something to look at, something to look out on. Which, of course, living in the suburbs of London, nobody has that really.
I do get distracted when I hear the crunch of the gravel, and I just see who's driven up the drive.
Yes,
it is like that.
Fantastic!
It is great though.
But he's also brought as a peace offering from the West Country, hasn't he? What have you brought, Nigel?
I brought the local tipple, which is literally made at the end of my street. This is Thatcher's cider, and we've got a bottle of Thatcher's Pear, a bottle of Old Rascal, and Green Goblin. Which is oak aged cider.
For listeners, they've got to guess when those have been opened. They won't say. They've got to guess when we've got one of those half bottles inside of us.
Right. I should just say, other product placement opportunities are available.
Oh, yeah.
That's
if anybody would like to send us stuff.
Yes.
We once got sent a huge case of a noxious energy drink called Rockstar.
Didn't we?
Yeah,
it was great.
You had a couple of heart attacks halfway through, I think, didn't you?
We turned on once. They were enormous cans as well. And we just started frothing at the mouth. And I'm fairly accelerated anyway. Talking the most colossal mound of horse manure at a ridiculous pace.
Anyway, amongst the horse manure this week, we've been covering various topics, one of which is Nigel's fantastic feature about cassette culture, which is in the current issue of Word, which is... definitely struck a chord with lots of people. I've actually been tweeting today soliciting the names that people gave to their homemade compilations during the 80s or whatever. And I've got some jewels of pretentiousness that I shall read out later on. We've also got music from Band of Skulls that we recorded earlier this week. But I wanted to start... I went to a gig on Monday night.
This is astonishing. What was it like?
It was really noisy. It was dark and everything. And I went to
see, all right.
I went to see, oddly enough, the act who at the time had been anointed to number one in the charts, which is Gautier. Is that what we say, Fraser?
I think
we say Gautier.
I think some people say Gotcha, don't they?
Which is the obvious, if you just look at the words, that's what you say. Who is Wally De Becker, is an Australian-Belgian... He's really good. Very good record, very good album, actually. But anyway, the reason I'm raising the subject is he was on at a place I'd never been to before, but I'd read about it and heard about it loads of times, called Wilton's Music Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Which is down in Whitechapel, I suppose, Shadwell, in the old East End, which is not an area I know at all well. But I was blundering my way towards this place, and I went down this cobbled street, and I thought, my God, this feels like Jack the Ripper.
Well, really?
And then it was only the following day when I looked on, Wikipedia. Sure enough, I was right in at Jack the Ripper.
I was there last night. And they now run, Jack the Ripper tours.
Well, we were talking about this, weren't we?
Absolutely. I thought it's so peculiar because, we're talking here about, the idea that the history somehow just is very forgiving.
There's a statute of limitations, isn't there?
Yeah, I got an email from my sister saying, look, we're going to meet up for this meal, in just outside of... Spitalfields, where it says Dash. He said, Jack the Ripper territory! Exclamation mark.
It's like Bronte Land, isn't it?
You wouldn't be doing that in Bradford if it was Yorkshire Ripper, Whoopee! Yorkshire Ripper territory.
This is a man who brutally murdered loads of prostitutes by tearing their lungs out, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to be the kind of thing we should
get excited about. There was another, following the same tangent further along this morning. Really interesting piece in the Times about the fact that in Belfast they're finally opening a big Titanic exhibit, a big kind of centre of some kind. Because obviously, Belfast is where it was built. Yeah, it was built Harland and Wolff, at the time when Belfast was the shipbuilder of the world, which is amazing to think, really.
Yeah.
And they were saying in this feature that it's only recently that in Belfast anybody's talked about it at all. For years, it was handed down from father to son, you don't talk about Titanic. Obviously, because it was a real tragic event, and probably Harland and Wolff employees may have been lost on it, And also, it was kind of sort of bad for business.
Yeah.
In the Harland and Wolff official history of the whole shipyard, it's been running for hundreds of years, it only gets one sentence. It refers to the Titanic because it was a sister ship of some other, obviously. And it said, the sister ship Titanic was lost in 1912 when it struck an iceberg. The end. Move on.
God.
You know, yeah. So anyway, in Belfast it was not talked about for years. And it was only post the movie and Leonardo DiCaprio and all that kind of carry on that they realised that Titanic centres, celebrations, exhibitions were springing up all over the world. And they thought, well, if anybody ought to be doing this, we built the damn thing.
Well, they've just made a 12-part TV series about the making of the Titanic in Belfast, which came out.
That was obviously all tie in with the same thing.
Starring a girl who was at school with one of my sons.
Okay.
Yeah, who's the wife
fictional.
Of the?
It's
from a novelisation.
Yeah. I wouldn't look out.
Yeah,
for
so there we are.
Anyway, back to Wilton's musical. Sorry.
Wilton's, yes.
Wilton's musical, which makes the proud claim that it is the oldest musical in the world. Built in the 1850s, ran as a musical for about 50 years, and then was used for all kinds of things. I don't know, a mission, a warehouse, all sorts of stuff. And it's in the last 10, 20 years been lovingly restored by, you know, people who care about this kind of stuff. And it's just the most fabulous place. It's so atmospheric. It's not huge, you know. You have an idea of musical, Victorian musical, as being huge with kind of galleries up as far as the eye can see. You know, Leonard Sachs in the good old days. Well, it's not like that at all, you know. It's quite modest.
Indubitably.
Indubitably. Featuring chiefly yourself. And anyway, it's a fabulous place. And what it's most fabulous for is a rock and roll gig. And it just struck me that this is another case of, it seems in my experience, am I alone in thinking this? That the best places to see live rock and roll are places that were built 50, 80 years before rock and roll was ever thought of.
But they're bound to be by definition because they've got to be small, haven't they? I mean, have you been to the Hackney Empire?
Yes, not to a rock and roll show. I've been there.
Yeah, because I've seen rock bands playing there. Same thing. It's just a small Victorian theatre, acoustic theatre with little boxes, and you're all up above the stage looking out. Anybody can see and hear.
It's a fantastic view from there. I saw the Fly Blind Boys of Alabama there in the early 90s when there were still five of them alive, and they could use the word five in their name before they dropped it.
They're not still original members, were they?
I think there's possibly one original member left, Jimmy Carter, but they were going since 1938, so they've done pretty well. But it's a fantastic place to go and see a gospel band, and that they would have been probably in their early 70s at the time and have been in obscurity for a long time, and they were just kind of making the comeback. Fantastic place to see.
Maybe it's because there's something vaguely churchy about those kind of places, you know. Because the other ones, it struck me that, obviously the one that we keep going back to is the Lyceum.
Yeah.
You know, which was kind of opened by Ellen Terry, you know, that was where people used to have hugely histrionic performances of Macbeth, and you know, when the Strand was, according to the filmmaker Mike Lee, it was the Las Vegas of Europe. You know, the Strand was showbiz central down there, and sadly, they don't use it for rock and roll shows anymore because Lion King and all that kind of carry on.
So I saw the Police there, and the U2 there.
I saw Bob Marley there. I saw the J. Giles Band. They used to have midnight shows.
Get competitive, does it? Well, I hear you, Jay Gunn. I raise you B-52s with the roof open. Roof open.
Oh, okay. I've been there for the roof open. Yeah. Right, okay. But they used to have midnight shows for some reason. So they'd have the normal theatrical show during the evening. Then they out would go the tourists. And then in would shuffle a load of great coated heads with me at the back of them, you know, to see
a copy of Zigzag.
took a copy of Zigzag to read while I was waiting. You know, we should always have to wait.
Some roll up.
And I saw Brewer's Droop and the Jay Giles Band. Jay Giles Band probably came on about 4 a.m. I don't know how anybody was still standing at that point, you know. But
I've seen Brewer's Droop. Nigel, probably the only person here who hasn't seen Brewer's Droop.
I am too
genuinely
young. Sorry, guys,
terrible
I am too
group.
Young.
Genuinely.
I quite liked him. The other one, really old, that struck me is Camden Palace. That's a very old place.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
BBC Theatre, and then became the Music Machine. And, you know, it was kind of the centre of neo-romantics and so forth.
City Music Hall?
Radio City Music Hall. I've not seen a rock and roll... Yeah, they have rock and roll shows there.
I've seen The Cure there.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Incredible place.
Yeah. That's an extraordinary place. I saw the Christmas show at the Radio City Music Hall, and the stage is so big that they can actually
had, and I'm not exaggerating at all, a procession of elephants cross the stage. they were moving them in from one door on one cross
the
street.
In the room.
And off the other, and you know, straight into their trailers outside. Extraordinary place.
There's an advantage as well with being in an architecturally handsome place. Is that if the band are a bit lousy, you've got something to look at.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're stood in Cardiff International Arena, best wishes to them, but it's not an architectural gem.
You see, I'm personally very prejudiced against gigs and that feel to me like libraries or civic facilities.
I'm exactly the opposite. Give me a comfy seat at the front row of the Barbican any time.
Listen, I've seen some fabulous shows.
Have you ever seen a show at the Brighton Centre?
Brighton
Centre, is it?
That's a long time.
Sorry if anyone's listening who lives in Brighton.
No, they're probably the first ones to point it out.
It's just a rectangular box, usually used for Conservative conferences, actually. I saw the Stranglers there.
I used to go to record fairs there. Norman Cook would be pre-Fat Boy Slim would always be there.
Huge, what the whole thing.
Well,
gigantic.
There were big record fairs back then. Yeah, sort of mid-80s. Yeah.
So, what's your favourite venue, Nige?
My favourite venue. I wrote about this on Jude's my band T-shirt blog about this the other day. I used to live in Minneapolis, and the venue there, First Avenue, which is the venue that Prince plays in Purple Rain. And I did a year at university out there.
How brilliant.
And I was the only one of age who could go to over 21 shows. So I would take myself off there four or five times a week. And it was an old bus depot. And it was just fantastic.
That's brilliant.
And everyone, because Minneapolis is the bigger town between Chicago and Seattle, everyone would stop in town. And
so who did you see there? What sort of bands did you see?
I saw Steve Earle support Los Lobos there. Happy Mondays. My God, they were appalling.
They got them on a bad day.
On a bad day, 45 minutes, back to audience. Days. Great, thank you. Thank you very much, good night. Billy Bragg, I'd see a lot of British people there. Aztec Camera came through and Billy Bragg, but then also Replacements, I think, a lot of hometown stuff as well.
Right. Your favourite venue, Mark?
Shepherd's Bush Empire for me.
It's in his garden. It's a room.
I could lean over
and
tap on the door and say, have they started yet?
What about somewhere further afield?
I don't know. I love the Albert Hall. It's terrible acoustic. I just like being in it, you know. But I don't know.
I like being in the Albert Hall. You always get the feeling in the Albert Hall that the act can see you as well as you can see the act.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably quite a good thing. Favourite venue, Fraser?
Brixton Academy, funnily enough.
Oh, right.
Two reasons. One, I love the fact that it's a big venue, standing venue with a sloping floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And secondly, it's got the great thing where if you look up, it looks like you're outside.
Yes,
which is an incredible.
It's got like a cityscape.
You feel like you're within
a
square.
It's
like
incredible.
A Vatican thing or something. It's incredible.
Yeah, I agree with you.
As a good band, my best ever gig was Brixton Academy. David Byrne there in the early 90s. Fantastic, with a full salsa band in head to toe in white suits. Really playing salsa versions of salsa versions of Talking Heads songs.
Oh,
couldn't
go
wrong. And Fraser's right about the floor as well. Good view from anywhere.
Yeah. Do you remember the rainbow inside?
Yeah, I saw the jet there. Brilliant.
Do you remember the most extraordinary kind of decoration and display way up above the stage?
Yeah.
So if you're in the gods, like you and I probably were, because we couldn't afford any more.
Yeah, you were kind of level
You're completely level with the display. So, you know, to look at the band, you had to look directly down, didn't you? Whereas on your eye line was this extraordinary kind of Rudolph Valentino desert fantasy something. That's how cinemas were built in those days. That's how they were designed.
Brilliant.
You've been listening to the free feed of the Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.